The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Fred Brack reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. And for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 10 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And we have an extra special reason to thank the Carter Glass Insurance Agency today for the first reading of the new year, 2021. January is the month. And the reason is our copy of Our State has not yet arrived at the North Carolina Reading Service, and I have Carter Glass's personal copy right in my hands. So thank you very much. It's a pretty blue sky cover. And below that blue sky, we see some clouds on the horizon, probably covering some mountain ranges because there are some hills in the distance. And then we see a town, a lot of brick buildings, and then in the foreground, a slope up to the right corner of the cover. And it has a lot of pine trees, and they are dusted with snow. And that's how we like to see them, dusted, not laden down with broken branches. Just a beautiful winter scene. It says, Boone, 20 inches of snow turns App State into a sledder's paradise. I will bet. And I would like to begin the first reading of the new year and the new month with our From Elizabeth column, as we always do, the first reading of the month, Paths Forward, by Elizabeth Hudson, editor-in-chief of Our State magazine. More than the twisting spiral slide at Fraser Park, more than Eagle's Dime Store with its glass-fronted candy case, where I could get a paper bag filled with my favorite chocolate stars, more than a giraffe and ostrich habitat at the North Carolina Zoo, the absolute greatest place I knew growing up in Asheboro was the Randolph County Public Library. The side entrance was across the street from my grandmother's house, and she and I walked through those doors together every Saturday, the shiny waxed floors and the corridor widening out in front of us, gleaming like the path to Oz. I'd make my way to the children's room where the tables were kid-size and the bookshelves were low. The spines of the Dr. Seuss's and the Childcraft encyclopedias, the Amelia Bedelia's and Frog and Toad's, all at eye level. In here, I traveled along with Jess and Leslie as they explored the magical land of Terabithia, and with orphan Anne Shirley, who got sent to live on a farm called Green Gables. I listened as Jess Tuck implored Winnie not to drink from the Fountain of Youth. I watched Charlotte spin a web and remind Wilbur that he had always been her friend. The discovery of one book led me down other paths. Henry Huggins introduced me to Ramona and Ramona the Pest. A dive into the world of Narnia led me to the hobbits of Middle-earth. Libraries do this. They open up rabbit holes. They drop breadcrumbs. They blaze trails through forests. Not all those who wander are lost. At the circulation desk, the librarian, a tall woman with white hair named Miss Fox, had me print my name on the cards in the pockets of my books. I remember her red jacket, the towering way she stood over the desk, how her shoulders rounded as she stooped to show me a new book. at 7 years old, I couldn't have known the path that led Charles Anna Fox to my library, that she graduated from the North Carolina College for Women, UNCG, my alma mater, too, in the 30s, or that during World War II, she'd been called to the Navy Library in Washington, D.C., where she chose all the books for U.S. Navy ships. I couldn't have known that when she was sent to Camp Lejeune in 1942 to become the first base librarian, she was the sole woman there, or that she served as the librarian at Pearl Harbor before returning to her hometown in Asheboro, my hometown too, to run the library for the next 30 years, where she showed young readers like me where to find new stories, how to follow new paths. 4 years before she died in 2012, Miss Charles Anna Fox received the Order of the Longleaf Pine, one of only a handful of librarians in the state to receive such an honor. I think she would have been proud to know that I learned all this through an oral history interview for the Women Veterans Historical Project, a special collection housed at the UNCG Library. I'd been combing through their archives, researching a project that led me elsewhere, reacquainting me with a woman I remembered but didn't really know. Libraries do this, too. They hold on to the stories we never want to forget, preserving them for the next discovery. Well, as we dig into the photo essay for January 2021, I thought a little upbeat music might be in keeping after such a disastrous 2020 in so many ways. We're going to be reading a photo essay entitled The Snows of Appalachia. In the west, where the landscape rises to meet the sky, winter arrives early and puts on a show, softening our rugged peaks with a blanket of snow. Written by Katie St. Singh. We have a lovely winter scene here on the double spread of the opening. At its highest point, Roan Mountain reaches a commanding elevation of more than 6,000 feet. But on a misty morning along the Appalachian Trail between Round Bald and Jane Bald, Roan looks otherworldly, almost like an underwater scene. It's an interesting photo because the sky, as opposed to being blue, is really almost yellow. And I think that's because of a mist that has risen, or perhaps low clouds and a combination of them. And just a yellowish tone that's coming from the sun through all of this. In the distance, some rolling mountain peaks. But most of this is the foreground, which leads up to either a lake or an open plain. I can't really tell. These are snow and ice-covered trees. Fortunately, as I mentioned before, they're not enough to damage them, but they're just filled to maximum capacity before they start to tilt, I think. What used to be green is now white in these pine trees. And there's a bear tree in the foreground, lost all of its leaves, and it's got lots of branches, literally branches. I mean, if you look out, it branches and the branch branches and the branch branches, and there's nothing on it, but it's all white. A whole bunch of artistic sticks. And here is a little bit of a frozen stream, I think, flowing through all of this. And it's a pathway that leads up to the stream, and then maybe you could step over to the other side if that is, in fact, what it is. Very pretty. Overleaf, oh, we got a lot of blue here. This is the picture from the front cover, actually, but it's a double spread here. Campus cool in Boone, where the average yearly snowfall hovers around 35 inches. Winter weather is never far from mine. By the late 1980s, some students had begun choosing Appalachian State University for that very reason. With ski culture in full swing, App State's proximity to classic slopes like Beach and Sugar Mountains was a draw. In nearby Blowing Rock, App Ski Rocky Mountains French Swiss Ski College, founded by an ASU alum, even offered course credits. But as generations of resourceful mountaineers know, you can't, or rather don't, need skis or a snowboard for wintertime fun. A snowy hill and a sled or a cafeteria tray can be very much every bit as thrilling. 2 years ago, Winter Storm Diego dumped more than 20 inches of snow on App State in Boone, leaving Strawberry Hill in the foreground here, ripe for sledding. Now, we don't see any sledders, but we sure see evidence on the snow that they have been here. Down in the lower right corner, it says, the Our State Great Debate, Boone versus Blowing Rock. These neighboring mountain towns are both charming enough to stick inside a snow globe, but which quintessential winter destination is number one in your heart? Boone or Blowing Rock? Cast your vote at ourstate.com/greatdebate. So here again, this photo, we'll work it in reverse this time. We've got the foreground with lots of trees, I must say. You better have good aim and good skills in turning when you come down this slope. It's not all that steep up at the top, but it begins to drop off as it gets nearer the town, and you really have to navigate some big evergreen trees there. And then you get down onto the campus, all sort of a light brick color. All the buildings look, they were all made with the same color brick, sort of almost a sandstone color. All the roofs are covered with snow. Don't really see much life down there from this distance. There's a roadway leading through the campus, but I can't, and just vaguely see the cars. Now, beyond the campus, we have woods, and they're all a whitish-gray look as they've been dusted by snow on the trees, and some of it's hanging at the top. And then the hills get bigger in the distance, and the clouds roll in, and it gets a purplish leading to a lighter blue, leading at the very top to a beautiful Carolina blue sky. Overleaf, Southern Slopes. When Tom and Judy Alexander started Cataluchi Ranch in the 1930s, their Haywood County tract was both a working farm and a rustic getaway for city folks to ride horses, fish for trout, and hike the Great Smoky Mountains. The Alexanders would sometimes whiz down the slopes on homemade skis, but in those days, adding a ski run for guests was out of the question. In the South, the snowfall was just too unreliable. Finally, snowmaking technology offered a helping hand. In 1961, the family opened the first commercial ski area in North Carolina, setting in motion a Southern skiing tradition. And here we have, in the top left, a ski lift. There are two people on them. They both have helmets on and goggles. And why do you suppose they have helmets? They have snowboards, hanging from their feet. So they're ready to take a tumble when they come down. On the right-hand side, in the late 60s, Cataluchi Ski Area moved to its current location, the 5,400-foot Moody Top Mountain, where snowmaking guns ensure fresh powder from early November to March. We see one of the slopes coming down from the top right. It separates. There is a row of trees in the middle, and then it rejoins. You make a sharp left turn from the right-hand side and come back onto the main slope, which comes underneath one of the two lifts that are shown here, onto a really wide ski slope to come down to the main lodge. The rest of the scene is lightly snowed upon hills and a beautiful blue Carolina sky. Island in the sky. On a frosty winter day, Weah Bald floats like an island in a sea of clouds with a lone stone fire tower for its lighthouse. Built by the Civilian Conservation Corps in the 1930s, the tower is the highest point on the 5,385-foot Bald, and it stands near the intersection of two long-distance trails, the Appalachian and the Bartram. On a clearer day, in a warmer season, hikers might cross paths here in search of blooming rhododendrons and sweeping views of Nantahala National Forest. For now, the landscape waits quietly under a blanket of snow and rime. R-I-M-E. That's that icy stuff. Once used to spot wildfires, the Weah Ball Lookout Tower was eventually decommissioned, but when the clouds part, it still offers panoramic views of the southern Appalachians. And here it is in this picture, the center. It's not very tall, but what the heck, it's at the top of the bald, so you don't need it to be too tall. And there is a path coming down from that. It's coming straight toward us on either side. There's forest, a little pathway going off to the left for some reason. Nothing to the right, which slopes down. This is all above the clouds, because when we look beyond the bald and the fire tower, we're seeing a sea of puffy clouds, like whipped cream on the surface of a liquid or something like that. They're all just puffing up from one level. Nothing above except the open skies and some wispy clouds. Overleaf, another double spread, crown jewels. No matter the season, dazzling white boulders crown the summit of Shining Rock, the aptly named centerpiece of North Carolina's largest wilderness area. Shining Rock was one of the original areas protected by the Wilderness Act of 1964, and in the decades since, it has grown to encompass more than 18,000 acres in and around Haywood County. And it has remained remote, as promised. Only the most determined hikers see Shining Rock's white quartz outcrops, in the winter months when neighboring Great Balsam Peaks get a snowy coat to match. From the Art Loeb Trail, photographer Thomas Moores followed the Old Butt Knob Trail to reach the 6,040-foot peak of Shining Rock and a memorable view of Black Balsam Knob to the south. And I guess that's what we're looking at here. A man in a red parka and a red ski cap is sitting with his back to us. He's sitting on a boulder, which we guess is right at the top of the peak here. There is a lone pine sticking way up in front of him, about 30 feet out. It's weathered the odds, to make a small pun. It is covered with snow, and it's clearly a wind-blown tree that's lost some branches over the years, but it's still there. And as we look out, the rest of the area is pretty much evenly high. It comes down a little bit in peaks, but most of the trees are about the same height as he looks off. And way in the distance, just beyond these, you can see a ridge of mountains at an even height, but they're just barely visible. And then that beautiful blue Carolina sky again with some wispy clouds way up high. Now, our last picture in our photo pictorial this month is a little shy this month, or let's put it this way, I shouldn't say shy, it's shorter than usual. Winter warmth. The view from Callaway Peak, the highest point on Grandfather Mountain, is always stunning. For experienced hikers, it's a spectacular reward, well worth the strenuous trek along Profile and Grandfather Trails. But timing is everything. Those who ascend in time for a winter sunset arrive during the magic hour, when the landscape feels a little less frozen, its icy blues and purples cast, if only for a moment, in a warming pink glow. And indeed, we see that wonderful pink. It's in the sky, all over the clouds up there, and there's clouds down low, because again, we're up pretty high, and some of those clouds off to the left are definitely pinkish, while on the right-hand side, they are definitely white, up against the bluish-gray surface of some rocky peaks that are sticking up there. The entire sky is cloudy and giving us a wonderful sunset view. The sun is peeking out between the lower edge of the clouds and the horizon as we see it. So it's a blast of yellow over there. And right in the foreground, we're in the shade, and those trees are just covered with snow. It says, from the Watauga View Overlook on Callaway Peak, you can see Linville Ridge and Sugar Mountain, and beyond to the Roanne Highlands, located on the western edge of North Carolina. And so ends our reading of the pictorial this month. And we'll take a crack at one article. Oh, the places we've been. When a writer's oldest daughter heads to college, a flood of memories from their travels around North Carolina causes him to reflect and to write a letter so they will never forget, written by Todd Delaney. Dear Casey, and we see a picture over here of Casey as a young girl standing someplace. Our hands are on a piece of granite or something in an opening in a window at maybe a tower or something. There was never any doubt, really. Sure, we loved the beauty of App State and the coziness of UNC Asheville. And then there was the purple and gold enthusiasm for East Carolina and all the promise of opportunities beyond your wildest dreams from colleges around the country that invited you to tour their campuses. On the way home from each one, to break the awkward silence, I'd make some ham-fisted comment about how cool the library or the dorm or the campus was. And every time you'd reply, "Yeah, it was nice," in a tone that implied, "But it's not Chapel Hill." In the summer of 2019, when we finally got to tour the esteemed University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, I promised you that I wouldn't wear my favorite Duke shirt. And I promised not to embarrass you with any stupid dad jokes. For the record, I promised to try not to make any stupid dad jokes. And I promised that where you would go to college was your decision, not mine. All promises kept. When the call came in early 2020, you still had an interview lined up at NC State, a very worthy choice, just as all the others were. When you told me that UNC had accepted your application and that you would be a Tar Heel, my proud dad reaction was, "Of course they accepted you. You'd worked hard since kindergarten and had a top-tier scholastic resume." All that was left was to march across the stage with the rest of the class of 2020 and start your college career in the fall. What could go wrong, right? 2020! Your future? Your next chapter in life, next year, next week, is unpredictable. But it always has been. From day one to today, my dad hopes have been high, and my confidence in you has been over the top. And, with a nod to Dr. Seuss, sometimes I need to remind you and myself of the places we've been and the places you'll go. On the day you were born, Ohio State blew out Purdue at the Shoe. As I remember it, you were tiny and quiet, unfazed by the occasional "yes" whisper yelled by your dad. It seemed like the most natural thing in the world, watching my beloved Buckeyes with my beloved daughter. It was, of course, blissful ignorance. There was no way to know the trials we'd face in the coming years, divorce, death, moving, pandemic, or the joys, so many joys to come and so many places to explore. And explore we did. We found refuge at Fort Macon in every season, from rain or sweltering shine. During the winter, when the sun set over the ocean and the beach was open and empty, the place was all ours. Whether we're chasing cold, frothy waves or ducking in and out of the shadows of the fort, we ran and laughed until we were, well, I was, breathless. Our annual Valentine's Day trip to Oriental was a tradition until it wasn't. Lingering at the ferry port at Cherry Branch and rushing back to the ferry port at Minnesota Beach, and in between having our special Dad Casey date eating pizza at the Silos, absolutely not trespassing at the marina, and one of us eating cheap oysters at M&M's Cafe. Getting to places and getting home from places all was made for great memories in their own right, like when you were learning to read and practiced on every road sign along the route. My favorite will always be the MIAKIAPOW highway coming out of Jacksonville, which you not incorrectly read as Miakia Pow Highway, just as it's written. my 4 a.m. recollections of waiting for our train in D.C. at the ornate Greensboro Amtrak Depot are a bit fuzzy, but memories of our evening flight home into PTI Airport, with the lights sparkling below and your eyes wide in the window seat, are imprinted in my mental scrapbook. And for every trip we took to the Midwest to visit family, we always knew we were truly back home when we crested the hill on U.S. Highway 52 and Pilot Mountain came into view. There are entire chapters in our scrapbook devoted to memories of food, pizza in anonymous towns, on the way to somewhere else, chicken nugget dinners at white tablecloth restaurants, and so many lunches and snacks and gummy worms eaten on the road or in a park picnic shelter, and with so many French fries shared with hungry seagulls at the beach. Sometimes the places we went weren't about travel at all. Handing bouquets to my ballerina after your dance recitals at the West Carteret High School Auditorium was almost as memorable as watching Carolina Ballet perform the Nutcracker every year at Raleigh Memorial Auditorium. Each year we sat somewhere different. From the balcony we could take in the enormity of it all. In the front row we could feel the music and meet the kettle drummer. During Hurricane Sandy, we listened to ghost stories on NPR and to the wind howling outside our hotel window in Pine Knoll Shores. It was easily the safest, most dangerous thing we've ever done. And when surgery relegated me to the couch to recover from most of the summer of 2016, you were my Summer Olympics sports buddy all day and into the night. It wasn't your first taste of sports, of course. Since you were old enough to keep score, you had tagged along with me and your sports-writing stepmom to Ashboro Copperhead baseball games and Friday night high school football. And, of course, you posed in more OHIO photos than any of your NC-born and bred classmates in the class of 2020. Now here you are at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, wearing Carolina blue and rushing across the quad to class. Sort of. You were born with my procrastination gene, so you're still rushing, but just finishing assignments before your next online class. For now. You'll be back on campus eventually, and I'll be reorganizing my mental scrapbook of memories whenever a holiday rolls around, or unexpectedly when I drive through a town or crossroads that sparks a memory of our travels. New Bern or Beaufort, Spivey's Corner. All cherished memories of the places we've been. Well, speaking of colleges, right on the next page is an advertisement in closing for today's session. Salem Academy and College, 250th anniversary coming up in 2022. Apply today at salemacademy.com or salem.edu. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine, and I certainly hope you enjoyed it, and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.